This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. It's episode 307 as we hit the off-season section of the off-season program is what we're at now. Episode 307, I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And with me is Seth Cox, as nearly always, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast, as they are now on their post-draft content. I know they dropped a show, record Monday night about the 2018 quarterbacks is what you guys talked about in the most recent edition?
Yeah, looking back, I mean, we were
Josh Rosen.
Yeah, we took our hiatus at that time, and you know, but we still had some takes out on Twitter and within our group text that we went back and found. And interesting, I mean, to go back and look at those, we both, I feel like, nailed the quarterback one in the class with Lamar Jackson, but we both definitely thought too highly of Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, and didn't think highly enough of Josh Allen. And you know, it's interesting to go back and just look at what you thought and the reasons you had concerns, and then what you liked, and kind of looking at them now. And we, you know, that we did have some commentary on this upcoming quarterback class about, you know, guys like a kid like Keaton Slovis of USC, who, you know, Is he going to go the Rosen route where he has a, you know, phenomenal freshman year and then kind of falls back, and, you know, then you make excuses for that fallback? Obviously, he's got his junior year to show that it's not a big deal, but we'll see how that works out. So, yeah, it's been fun. And then for the patron, we're starting in on the 2022 draft. So if you are interested in that, you can get on Justin or myself's Twitter account at AFC, the number 2 NFC, or at SCoxFB. You can follow that to our patron and sign up $2 a month or $4 a month, and you get the extra podcast. And then we're starting some written content about the 2022 class. Justin's going to do some athletic profiles from all the draft classes, including our Arizona Cardinals, and what they look for in athletes, and kind of over the years, what they've been looking for in athletes at certain positions in the draft. So, you know, it never stops, but it's a lot of fun. And, you know, we've already, like I said, started to get into that 2022 class to kind of get to know these guys. And it's an intriguing class. If you thought the cornerbacks were good this year, just wait till you see the guys next year.
And in this edition of the show, we have the schedule has been released. We'll react to it. It came out a week ago, but this is the first time we've been able to get on to do that. So we'll talk about the Cardinals' 2021 schedule, what we like about it, what are the toughest sections of it. We'll make predictions. I mean, it's ridiculous, but we're going to do predictions for those games because why not? It's the offseason. We're going to talk about couple of the decisions that have been made, because we could see Jordan Hicks on the way out, Zaven Collins into the starting lineups. We had some commentary. The Cardinals had rookie camp this last weekend, and we've had some press access, some media access to some of the rookies, so we know a little bit about, since they've been drafted, you get a little more quotes out there. What is there to know? And then, with OTAs beginning next week, we will talk about some of the starting battles that there will be, as well as, well, how much will the Cardinals actually do in OTAs? So let's go ahead and get started. We got the schedule. We got the schedule for the Cardinals last week. It was a big deal. It was in piece, you know, kind of little bits and pieces, as it is every year. The first thing we know is that they were going to open on the road. So the TV networks released their week one schedule. So before we knew anything else, we knew that the Cardinals are going to open on the road against the Tennessee Titans. And then we got the rest of the deal. And what's kind of fun is that, you know, the Cardinals in this 17-game season, they will have 3 primetime games all at home. They're going to play on a Thursday night against the Green Bay Packers. They're going to play on a Monday night at home against the LA Rams, and also on a Saturday night, Christmas Day, against the Indianapolis Colts. So here is the rundown of the schedule if you haven't already heard it or seen it yet. It goes like this. Week 1, they are at the Titans. They come home in Week 2 and face the Minnesota Vikings, Patrick Peterson coming home. Week 3, they're on the road to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. You'll get to see Trevor Lawrence. The LA Rams, they're at the LA Rams in Week 4, so they got two straight road games. So they play 3 of the first 4 on the road. Then they return home in Week 5. The 49ers take them on at home. Then Week 6, they're on the road in Cleveland. Come back in Week 7 against the Houston Texans. That's the J.J. Watt, DeAndre Hopkins revenge game. They will play 2 home games in a row. They'll get the short week against the Packers in Week 8. They will head to San Francisco after the mini bye to take on the 49ers. Week 10, they get Hassan Reddick and the Carolina Panthers. Week 11, they face the Seahawks for the first time in Seattle. Then they will get the bye week in Week 12. Kind of significant. It is the week of Thanksgiving. They will open up after the bye on the road against the Bears in December. Then they will be at home on Monday night against the LA Rams. Then on the road at Detroit, at home on a Saturday, Christmas Day, against the Indianapolis Colts. Week 17 at Dallas, and week 18 at home to close the season against the Seattle Seahawks. Interesting of note, there's almost one home away, except for the 2 games in a row, weeks 3 and 4 on the road, and then the 2 games at home in a row, weeks 7 and 8. And then I guess technically they have 2 consecutive road games, but they're split up by the bye. So that's a little bit different. So what do you take away from the schedule overall?
I think the first thing is they're cautiously optimistic about the Arizona Cardinals in 2021. Three prime time games is a big deal for a team that was 7-9 last year. I mean, they weren't a winning team. They didn't make the playoffs. And it's not something you see often for the Arizona Cardinals. Let's be honest. We just don't see the Cardinals very often getting primetime games when they...
And all 3 at home. That was significant to me. It's like, not only that, they get 3 primetime games. They got 3 at home.
Yeah, and especially when you're talking about this not being a winning team, not having made the playoffs with Cliff. It's just different to see them kind of... You never say favorable, because, I mean, in the end, it's a pretty balanced schedule overall. But the reality is, it's rare to see 3 primetime games, 3 home primetime games for a non-playoff team.
Right. And what's funny is I even saw kind of the question. I think it was one of the local stations or one of the local publications around here that actually asked if the Cardinals got snubbed with 3 primetime games, which I think ties a franchise record for the initial schedule release, because the other 3 NFC West teams each got 5 primetime games. And now here's the thing. It's completely understandable why the 3 other teams would get 5 primetime games. 1, the Rams are expected to be fantastic. Seattle's got Russell Wilson. They've been to the playoffs every year but 1, I think, since Russell Wilson. Every year since 1, since Russell Wilson entered the league in 2012. It's absurd. And the 49ers, they were in the Super Bowl 2 years ago and have a young quarterback that could be exciting, whether he plays or whether he's not. So I completely understand. And plus, the 49ers are considered a national team. They've had a huge fan base across the nation forever. The Rams, big market. And one of those primetime games is against the Cardinals at home. So I don't think that the Cardinals got hosed by any means. With the extra week, I mean, that does give you more primetime games. And the Cardinals, viably, because of that Week 18 matchup, and now since... since it's outside the college football schedule, it allows them to spread out those games. So that is, could be a game that gets moved to a Sunday night or perhaps Saturday is could what end up happening there, depending on what it looks like for the division races.
Is this the year, too, that Monday Night Football can change games?
I don't think Monday nights are changed.
Or is that starting?
That might be next year. I don't know. I remember hearing that, but then when the schedule details came out, that was not one of the things. And I think that does. Oh, and then the other thing of note is that the Cardinals will not play internationally. They could have, because the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to host a game in London, and the Cardinals were supposed to host, quote-unquote, host a game in Mexico in 2020, but the pandemic wiped that out. Apparently the pandemic's still wiping that out, so we'll have to wait and see what happens in 2022. That said, for me, I'll be honest, there's really only two road games of real concern. That'd be week one, because of the unknown, and week 13 in Chicago in December. That's less than ideal. But the only reason week one's going to be nice, because the Titans are cool. The Titans have been very good. Their defense was bad last year. They lost their top cover guy in Malcolm Butler, so they, you get a reunion game there. They lost. They lost Corey Davis. They lost Jonnu Smith. They lost their offensive coordinator. So there's a little bit of uncertainty there. However, and this kind of leads on to some of our the topic of discussion a little bit later in the show, that's going to be a huge test in week one for the young linebacker duo of Zaven Collins and Isaiah Smith to have to face Derrick Henry, who can embarrass players. So especially when you look at I end up writing about picks against the spread every year. There's one thing I've noticed trend-wise. I don't have an actual stat. Home openers come with extra juice for the home team. And so it's hard for the underdog to pull off a win in a lot of times. And so they're going to be in Tennessee. This, it's probably going to be the first time that there's fans in the stadium in who knows how long. Since, 2019. And so there's going to be some extra juice. So unless the Cardinals come out firing, which they could, that is the one game early that I'm like, we'll have to wait and see. And then what potentially could be that cold weather in Chicago. They're the only two real road games of concern, because we already knew they were playing everyone else where they were playing them.
Yeah, and I did look. So Monday night games can get flexed starting week 12. So that, theoretically could impact some of these games. Because you look at it, like you said, Dallas, late in the season, Dallas and even like the Chicago Bears game, I doubt they would give the Cardinals back-to-back Monday night football games, but if they got flexed out too. So... yeah, the only real, true test road game they got, in my eyes, is Chicago, because that's outdoors in December. At Detroit sucks, but it's in a dome. And then at Dallas sucks, but it's in a dome.
Right.
It's not.
And Kyler Murray literally has never lost there.
Right, exactly. So you look at it, from a weather perspective, obviously, always Tennessee, Jacksonville, Cleveland, in Seattle, Chicago. You can have bad weather at any time in those areas. But for the most part, there's really no games you look at and go, ooh, outside of Chicago. That could be cold and snowy, and
Other than that, everything is all about the opponent.
It really is.
It's just the opponent. They have to go to Cleveland. Cleveland's potentially good. They have to go to Seattle. They have to go to San Francisco. You have to go to LA every year. That's not a question. It's just the opponents instead of the time slot or the weather. Yeah, the Chicago game. And then for me, again, the opener, which is just the unknown.
Yeah, it's the every year unknown. And I'll say this, and we didn't mention it yet. Opening at -2.5, it's actually quite impressive.
Yes.
I was actually very surprised by that.
You know, in terms, I was on the radio on AM 1060. We're talking about that with Rooster, the host of the show. And, you know, typically in terms of betting lines, the home team gets 3 points for being at home, which means that if you're
looking on a neutral site,
the Cardinals are slightly favored. And it's
basically a toss up game,
which bodes well for the Cardinals because they've improved and there is uncertainty with the Titans.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions with Tennessee when you look at that game. I mean, we'll dive more into that. We're 4 months out, obviously. But there's a lot of questions with Tennessee along the offensive line. Their defense had a huge turnover. And then, you know, we know what Derrick Henry is. He is the best running back in the NFL. I mean, and like you said, that's going to be... It's going to be an interesting challenge for the young linebackers. What can they do? Who, you know, you don't, obviously one game won't be a career, but it's definitely going to tell you where they are in 2020 and who they are in 2020. The other thing is this. You look at what Derrick Henry did early last year in basically close wins for Tennessee. Tennessee beat Denver, who wasn't very good, 16-14, and then beat the Jaguars, who weren't very good, 33-30 in those first two games. Derrick Henry had 56 carries and exactly 200 yards rushing.
Wow.
No touchdowns. So he didn't really get going until week three when he finally, you know, his first game, he had 31 carries for 116 yards. I mean, the 116 yards looks great, but 31 carries, both those games were below 3.75 yards per carry average.
And it's going to be interesting to see his usage the last 2 years, if that's going to affect his legs early on this year.
That's what I was kind of getting at, is you just wonder if it's going to take him 3, 4, 5 weeks to get kind of hit that stride. You look at it after that game, he only had three more after the second game, he only had three more games where he was below 4 yards per carry. By the way, all of those games but one were still a win. So Tennessee's not just about Derrick Henry, but they love to have to run the ball more and kind of lean on Henry. Then you get the Vikings at home. That's another intriguing matchup because there was a report that they were looking to move on from Kirk Cousins if Justin Fields made it there. In fact, there was a report that they even informed Kirk Cousins of such potential if Justin Fields made it there.
Well, and then they went and drafted Kellen Mond, kind of represents the Justin Fields type of quarterback.
Right. And so obviously we're not expecting Mon to be the guy at this point, in week two. But that is a game where their defense was awful last year, comparatively speaking to what we expect from a Mike Zimmer defense. And then their offense was just okay at times. Justin Jefferson had some great games, but you look at it, while going into most years, Tennessee, Minnesota, even Minnesota at home, you'd feel like it was a coin flip. You've got to feel okay about both of those games, the Cardinals' chances in both of those games.
Absolutely. I will say, looking at the first four games of the season, since they opened the season with 3 of 4 on the road, because of how the season goes, especially how you look how they started last year, that win in week one, I think, really propelled a lot of the things that happened in towards the middle of the season. It really kind of got the ball rolling for them. They need to make sure that they are no worse than 2-2 to start those first four games. You figure that Jaguars game, and honestly, I think it's very positive for the Cardinals to get the Jaguars early in the season before Trevor Lawrence has had much experience. Granted, they are a much improved talent team, but get him early before he's had a chance to let the game slow down at all. And so that you should get that one win. That's one that you should ideally pencil in. But then you just need to get, honestly, the Vikings game is a must win, really, if you're looking at the big scheme of things, and especially if you lose in week one, because you can't really, things will start to feel uneasy with this team if they start out 1-3, honestly.
Well, and you look at the first six games, and that's really going to tell the story of the season. If they're 3-3 or better, they're in a really good spot. I mean, at Tennessee, they're 2.5-point underdogs. Hosting Minnesota, they're right now 3.5-point favorites. Going to Jacksonville, they're 2.5-point favorites. I mean, road favorites in week three for the Arizona Cardinals is almost unheard of. They're only 3.5-point dogs against the 49ers in week four. And then in week five against the
49ers is week five.
Oh, sorry. Who is week four? Sorry. They're only 3.5-point dogs on the road in Los Angeles. Then in week five, it's a pickup against the 49ers. So, you know, Vegas is saying something similar. And then you go to week six, Cleveland, who's supposed to be one of the, you know, kind of favorites, they're 4.5-point favorites. That's not a huge number. Obviously, again, this is super, super, super early. But when you look at it from the Vegas perspective, they're expecting 3-3 from the Arizona Cardinals in the first six games. Obviously, that pick 'em in week five against the 49ers, because it's at home, we'll just lean that towards the Cardinals. But when you talk about, you know, Minnesota, Jacksonville, and San Francisco, they're toss-ups or favorites. That's 3-3 in the first six games. From there, you've got a Houston Texans team who projects to be the worst team in the NFL. The Cardinals open, again, this is super early, 10.5-point favorites.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's a massive number in the NFL.
Especially in May.
Right. The Cardinals open Thursday Night Football with Aaron Rodgers still on the Green Bay roster as 3-point favorites on Thursday Night Football. So, again, we're talking about those first six games. They have to find a way to go to 500, because from there, you look at it, Houston, that's, again, it's May. You don't ever do this, but you pencil that in as a win. Green Bay, even with Aaron Rodgers, you get them at home on Thursday night. That's a potential win. If they don't have Aaron Rodgers, you feel like that line moves from -3 to what, -5, -6, if it's Blake Bortles or Jordan Love. Like, you feel much better about that. Dogs on the road in San Francisco, but then you get Carolina at home. And so that's the thing. Is like, you look at it, and we did this last year, you look at it in sections, and you say, hey, 3-3 going into the Houston game. And then going into the bye week, you look at it and you say, okay, Houston, Green Bay, Carolina, they should win three of those games, at San Francisco, at Seattle, both tough games, but that would put them at 6-5 after going into the bye week. And again, you're over 500 going into the bye. Now it's about how you close out the season. And that is where I think, first off, you and I would both agree, you pause, because that's what the unknown for Cliff and Kyler has been, is how they finish seasons, because we've seen that they're able to do enough at the beginning of seasons and then kind of in the middle of seasons to put themselves in a position. But this year, coming out of the bye week, there's no games that you're like, okay, let's put that down as a loss. But after the performance of last year, there's no games where you're comfortable going, hey, that's a win.
Right, right. So let's go over the game by game next. Coming up to the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we will go through our predictions, our May predictions. What games do we think will they win? Which ones will be losses? Do we see them making the postseason this year? That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. So we've already talked a little bit about that schedule early on. So I'll give you the overview of my predictions. I already published this a few days ago. I'm going to go with this. I'm going to predict the Cardinals make it to the postseason just based on these are modest predictions. Modestly optimistic. We've seen the progress the Cardinals have made. I have, and with the improvements on the roster, I have no reason to believe that they're going to be worse than a year ago, especially how they played down the stretch. That said, I'm going to always say this. When it comes to playoff hopes, it starts with your games in the division. The Cardinals, if they want, I think any wild card team has to go 3-3 minimum in your division, and ideally it's by splitting each with each team, because that way you never have a head-to-head loss in a tiebreaker against any of the teams in the division, which kind of knocks you out of any tiebreaking scenarios. So you start with having to go at least 3-3 to make a wild card. If you go 4-2, you're probably going to win the division unless you're bad other places. But based on what we know about the NFC West, if you can go 4-2 in the NFC West, you're going to be pretty freaking good. And so knowing that, I'm going to assume a split. I'm going to go with a split with all three teams. It's not necessarily a home split. They don't win all three games at home and lose them on the road. Then the other parts for this critical, and this is where it bit the Cardinals in the butt last year. Say what you want about the... Now, honestly, Zane Gonzalez makes that kick against the Patriots in the playoffs. However, that's not what ultimately lost them their playoff berth. It was their losses to Carolina and Detroit, which are conference games where that put them behind the eight ball in terms of conference record and head-to-head, which is why Chicago made it to the playoffs over the Cardinals. If they make the kick against the Patriots, it doesn't matter. But they shot themselves in the foot by losing to Detroit. Now, they weren't really competitive. They had no chance, honestly, in Carolina. But that Detroit game, they should have won. So, with that, this is my game-by-game breakdown. I start out with a Week 1 loss. They lose to Tennessee. Do you have a prediction of them winning or losing in that game to open the season?
I have them winning the opening game.
So you've got them as 1-0. I've got them as 0-1. They return. They open. They have their home debut in Week 2. I have them beating the Vikings and Patrick Peterson. What say you?
I have them winning Week 2 as well.
Okay. 2-0 on your end. 1-1 on my end. The trip to Jacksonville in Week 3, I have them winning. So they're 2-1. I'm assuming you have that penciled in as a well, win as a well.
Yep, so 3-0.
Excitement.
After the first three games, that's not a bad start.
And I'm, you know, until I see them do it, there's no way I can predict the Cardinals are going to win in Los Angeles. I hope they do it, but no way can I pencil that in May. So I'm going to say the Cardinals lose to the Rams on the road in Week 4, 2-2. Do you see the same thing?
Yep, first loss of the season, 3-1. Heading into their second division game, this one against the 49ers at home.
Do you have them beating the 49ers?
I do. So I have them at 4-1 heading into what looks to be in May, a really tough road game in Cleveland.
And I have,
by the way, that Cleveland game is a evening game. I don't know.
Right. It's a late start. This year they have more of the 4 p.m. starts. It's going to be interesting because, like, we're used to 1 p.m. start games, but that's when they're at home. That's a road game that starts at 1, which will be fun. I have them beating the 49ers to improve to 3-2. The Browns game is, I kind of go through the schedule, so I didn't end up picking the Cardinals to go like 7-1 at home and 3-6 on the road. I kind of have picked the Cardinals. I went through the schedule and thought they're going to win one on the road that I don't expect them to, and they're going to lose one at home that they probably shouldn't. I have this game in Cleveland with Kyler getting the best of Baker Mayfield again and picking up the win to go to 4-2. What about you?
I have them losing this game, so they are 4-2 as well.
Week 7 against the Texans, they better win that game. That's 5-2. How about you?
Yep, I agree, and that takes us to a Thursday night matchup where this game, I want to put the early caveat out there. I'm predicting a win no matter who's at quarterback for the Packers.
The Cardinals on Thursday night, I'm going to say this is probably a game they might lose. And so I'm going to have them losing. So you have them going to 6-2.
And you would probably flip that if it ends up being correct. Bortles or Love.
And but I still think Rodgers ultimately is going to be there.
I think he's petty enough to retire. I truly do.
And so I have them losing to the Packers, and then I have them going to San Francisco and losing. So they lose 2 in a row. They drop to 5-4. And what about you?
I have them losing to San Francisco as well. So that puts them at 6-3 on my schedule.
I have them beating the Panthers. Hassan Reddick is not the force that he thinks he's going to be. So I have them going to 6-4. And what do you do?
Yes, win as well. So 7-3, heading to Seattle right before the bye week.
And I have them, this is the one game where I had them winning on the road in the division. Because, for some reason, they tend to play pretty well at Seattle. They get to pick up the win. They improve to 7-4.
I have this one as a loss. And the reason I had this one as a loss was because I think going in at 7-3, knowing you have a bye coming up, I feel like this is one of the, it's not a trap game, but I feel like it's one of those games where the focus may not be as good as you want it to be.
I am so glad, and Cliff is too, Cliff Kingsbury is too, that the Cardinals do not play on the week of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, unless you play Thanksgiving, I don't want to play.
Because as we've seen the last 2 years, their game on Sunday after Thanksgiving has been atrocious. So
yeah, they definitely have been hanging out with you and I and eating too much on Thanksgiving.
Totally. I have them going on the road and losing in the cold of Chicago, dropping to 7-5.
I have them picking up a win in Chicago, going to 8-4. Really think that their running game is going to spark this year with the addition of Rodney Hudson. I think James Conner is going to be a guy that late as the season goes along begins to develop into a kind of a grinder for them and gives them some different options, and they're going to end up being able to weather a potential bad weather game, and that their defense is just going to overwhelm a bad Andy Dalton. And I think they'll be the team that's when Justin Fields starts to get some play will be against the Cardinals, because they'll beat up Andy Dalton so bad.
Fun. Now, week 14, this is where the Cardinals get the monkey off their bat. They finally beat the Rams. I have them winning on Monday night at home. They improved to 8-5 with 4 games to go.
I'm with you. I think they win that game, improved to 9-4. I like their chances to win one game against the Rams this year. I wouldn't, if they had played any better offensively, I would have picked them to win in LA. But I worry that they're going to struggle early against that Rams defense again.
Very possibly. Week 15 on the road in Detroit. they finally beat Jared Goff. They hadn't done so in their rookie since the rookie year, and they've got a losing streak. They haven't beaten Detroit since 2016, I think 2015 or 2016, and they finally pick up that win. They improved to 9-5 in my predictions.
And this is the typical Cardinals letdown game. I have them losing to Detroit. People question me about this on the site because they're like, wait, you think they're going to beat Chicago in Chicago and lose to Detroit in Detroit? And I'm like, how long have we been Cardinals fans, people? Like, isn't that the MO? But yeah, I have them losing this one in Detroit. And that drops them to 9-5.
Okay, so we're at the same record, Christmas Day against the Colts. This is the home game that I have them losing that they should win. Although I'm not going to say so. The Colts are not a bad team. It's ultimately going to come down how Carson Wentz plays. That defense is quite good. That offensive line is quite good. I have the Colts sneaking away with a win here. The Cardinals drop to 9-6.
I have them winning this game and giving us a Christmas miracle by clinching a playoff spot, not the division, a playoff spot at 10-5 with two games to go.
Ooh. So I have them at 9-6. They're definitely in the mix. I have them going to Dallas, and Kyler Murray remains unbeaten there, improving to 10-6, where that's where I have them clinching a wild card spot. 10th win of the year, week 17 against the Cowboys.
And I have them losing in Dallas. Not resting players necessarily at this point, but maybe not playing as hard as you would want them to. And you see that in the Dallas game.
And then I have them closing at home with a loss. This is their home loss in the division. But if they've clinched a playoff spot, this might be where you see them resting a few players, even though you don't, they'll probably playing for seeding anyway with the Seahawks in play, but I see this is where they lose their game in the division. They finish 10-7 and they are a wild card team.
And with the loss to Dallas, they lost any chance to win the division. And I have the same thing, a loss to Seattle in Arizona, as Seattle's playing for either the playoff spot or to clinch the division, and they'll have slightly more to play for in the game than Arizona. So I have them 10-7 and in the playoffs as well.
And here's the thing for me, as long as they make the postseason, honestly, what I really would like to see them is to make the playoffs and win one game. Whether that means
you want to see them on the same track as what Cleveland is, which is exactly what you said, win or make the playoffs, go win a game in the playoffs.
Unless somehow, like if they play well enough that they win the division,
then the expectations change.
And then they should. If they're not going to get a playoff bye because there's only one team that gets that bye, and I don't think they're going to be the best team in the NFC. They could be,
but you know what? Outside of Tampa, we don't know anything about this NFC this year.
It's true.
I mean, truly, everything's up in the air with Aaron Rodgers news. When does Trey Lance take over for Jimmy G? You know, what do the Seahawks have left? You know, do they have another 3 to 5 year run with Russell Wilson, or are they just truly piecing it together? I mean, honestly, you look at each division, the NFC North, nobody knows anything. The NFC South, it's Tampa Bay and everybody else. The NFC, what is that, East is, I mean, I think we're all assuming Dallas takes it if everybody's healthy in Dallas, right? I mean, don't get me wrong, the Washington football team's defense is nasty, but are we really going with Fitzmagic?
That's Patrick.
I don't know
about that division, but it feels like, honestly, Ron Rivera has put himself literally in the identical scenario as he was in with the Panthers, where it's a bad division. Well, it's a division where you win by not being very good. You're just good enough to win the division.
So we'll see what happens, man. I it's tough this year, and you know, 9-7 last year would have obviously made the playoffs. They would have gone up to Seattle and played Seattle in a game they probably could have won. With hindsight, you know, we look at it now. Their defense clearly isn't the Rams' defense. Now maybe this year it could be closer to that, but if they get to 10-7 and they're a playoff team, I think you have to be excited about how close they are, because then we'll probably say they are a, you know, X position away. Maybe it is still a cornerback. Maybe it is a running back. Maybe they just truly missed out on having a dominant running back. Maybe it is a second wide receiver, or, you know, a wide receiver opposite DeAndre Hopkins, because Rondale Moore did so well in the slot, but they needed another outside threat. Maybe it's a tight end. You know, that's the thing, is if you're at 10-7 in a playoff team, you do what the Browns did this year, right? And you look at it and you go, this team's really close. They just need X, Y, or Z and to take the next step. And that's what the Browns did. I mean, the Browns said, hey, you know, we need to improve our linebacking core. So what did they do? They went out and our secondary. And what did they do? They went out, got Greg Newsome. They got Jadeveon Clowney. They continued to improve their defense around Myles Garrett, and that offense is tailor-made for Baker Mayfield. The Cardinals should be on the same trajectory. If Cliff is a coach worth his salt, that's where they're at this year. Outside of a Kyler Murray injury, I think you and I would agree that it is playoffs or bust for this team this year.
That's what every move has kind of felt like. I know that they're trying to play with this 2-year window they have before they have to pay Kyler, but more so this year than last year, it feels they're really trying to strengthen everything so that they can win this year too. It feels like they've made progress, but if there's a step back, I could see things getting blown up. I don't know that, but it feels like it could go in that direction.
You would think you would have to. I mean, I'm kind of with you. Like, this isn't Seth and Jess talking insider information. This is Seth and Jess just talking logical, and that we would expect if they, barring a 9-8 season where they just missed the playoffs, and, you know, Kyler misses 2 or 3 games, and so you've got kind of that excuse, you are expecting this team to be a playoff team. Now, we're not saying they're a Super Bowl contender, but they should be a team that goes to the playoffs, and we even said wins a game in the playoffs. And if they're not doing that, then it's either the coach or the players, and you have to decide that. And I think we saw last year that talent-wise, they did lack talent, especially in certain areas. This year, you don't feel like they have that excuse.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to move on, from the schedule. There's some actual news out there. A player that's been given permission to make a trade, and a first-round pick who apparently is going to play every snap this year. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Interesting note, after the draft, it was made very clear that Steve Keim gave a mandate to Cliff Kingsbury and the personnel department and the coaching staff that their first two draft picks were expected to play early and often. Zaven Collins, drafted at a position where they already had an established veteran in Jordan Hicks. Honestly, I felt that he would probably be worked in early to then take over at some point, especially since where he excels is in the coverage aspect of things, and that's where Jordan Hicks is doing less well. However, Ian Rappaport with the report that Zaven Collins is slated to be the week one starter at Mike linebacker, basically meaning he's going to be a 100% snap guy, and that Jordan Hicks has been given permission to seek a trade. Personally, I find the move, well, I get why, especially with the need. I know Steve Keim wanted Isaiah Simmons to play more last year, and that he didn't. But he's really pushing the envelope this year, whether it is to force the coaches to use the picks that he makes, or it's to kind of change the reputation he has about draft picks. He did the opposite at literally every other position where he had a player and he upgraded with an older player so they didn't have to count on a younger player, except for Byron Murphy and Isaiah Simmons. But now you are betting the house on a guy that has played no snaps in the NFL and a guy who played 367 snaps in the NFL as your two every down linebackers.
Yeah, and they're basically going to sink or swim with what they're hoping turns out to be, a close facsimile of Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis, or KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner. I mean, that's what they're hoping to get in a return sense. We know that Vance likes to run a 4-2-5 as much as possible. With the grouping that they have, you look at, the ability to play JJ as a defensive end on the open side with Chandler playing stand up defensive end across from him, like they did a couple years ago when he had almost 20 sacks. I think that's what their thought process is going into this. And then you've got two special athletes at the linebacker position who can play, going downhill side to side and in coverage, giving you a lot of options. The interesting thing is going to be, who are the five defensive backs? We already know it's Buda Baker and Byron Murphy.
And Malcolm Butler.
And so we know those three. So are they expecting Jalen Thompson to continue to be one of the guys? And then who's the next guy? Is it Robert Alford? Do they play with another safety more like a Chris Banjo? What about Sean Williams? I mean, he was mostly a special teams guy in Cincinnati last year. So it'll be interesting to see how they deploy this defense. But I know that their goal initially is to have matchup diversity, especially with Isaiah and Zaven and Buda on the field, all three together, with guys that can play downhill or drop into coverage. And that gives you a lot of flexibility, because then everything kind of is a surprise, right? Like,
yeah.
you don't know who's coming, you don't know who's dropping, and that makes things a lot more difficult for teams to scheme. And then I think you've got some interesting NASCAR packages, or whatever they call them, in true passing downs, where you look at it, you've got an interior pass rusher in Jordan Phillips. You could probably slide JJ down as an interior pass rusher in certain packages, and you've got Marcus Golden or Devon Kennard where you can drop them in as well. So you've got a lot of options for this team, and you can run a base 3-4 still with Chandler and Kennard as your kind of base linebackers outside, and then JJ Lecky Fotu or Rashard Lawrence and Zach Allen as your down linemen, and then rotate in, you know, those guys. So you've just got a lot of options. But it is interesting to see that they're basically gambling all this veteran talent that they've put in the front and the back with young guys right in the middle in the heart of the defense. Especially, like you said, with week one being against Derrick Henry.
That's going to be interesting to see. Now, the part that I understand putting Zaven Collins in the lineup immediately. I do. Jordan Hicks clearly took a step back in his play last year, whether it was simply age, loss of talent, just a decline, or if he was battling some injuries, little lagging things over the course of the year, which is very possible. However, I get why they're trying to do right by him by trade him, but trading him is, to me, a huge mistake. And my guess is, considering Devondre Campbell still doesn't have a home and was overall the better of the two linebackers the Cardinals had last year in the middle of the field, that there's going to be virtually no market for him or not enough that's worth the Cardinals trading him. Because I think he's so much, unless he is a malcontent, which I don't know if he would be.
He doesn't seem like the type that would be, especially after taking a pay cut. I mean,
right?
You know the writing's on the wall.
And so I'd rather him on the bench because outside of...
He gives you a fallback plan.
Right. You've actually got a guy that's played. Tanner Vallejo, like the entire rest of the linebacker room, like including Isaiah Simmons, have combined for roughly what Jordan Hicks played last season. They have a few more. So they combined for some 1,100 snaps. The entire linebacking room, except for Jordan Hicks, and Jordan Hicks played more than 1,000 snaps just last year. And 367 of those come from Isaiah Simmons from last year. Tanner Vallejo, I know they like him, but what he's getting paid is as a backup. And so, and a guy that, I'll say this again, as much as I like how he plays, he's been a journeyman and a special teams player, and I will point this out, just like I mentioned with Dennis Gardeck. Dennis Gardeck got extended reps for the first time in that one game, and what did he do? He tore his ACL. His body wasn't used to it. It's unfortunate. Tanner Vallejo, twice in his career, when he was given playing time on defense, has ended up on IR. It happened, I think it was in Cleveland. It was either Cleveland or Washington. It happened in 2019, and he got, 11 snaps, for the Cardinals in 2019, and he ended up on IR. And so I worry if you're going to count on him about the durability if he has to play extended snaps, should the effectiveness of Simmons or Collins be an issue. Now, if the backup plan, if they trade Jordan Hicks and can re-sign Devondre Campbell to be the backup, I am very comfortable with that because Campbell has been a year in the system. He can play Mike or the weak side, Mike or Will, and so he can play either position spot.
He's a better fit backup wise than Hicks.
And so
he's not on the roster. So.
I don't want the linebacking core to look what it is, just minus Jordan Hicks. I think that's dumb. Especially with what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
It's kind of taking, it's going backwards with what they did everywhere else.
Yeah, like I said, it's just odd that that's how you would do it. But, I mean, they've built oddly before. We talked about it a lot last year with the safeties and the corners. And so, I mean, I don't know exactly what it is that their plan is, but they clearly need to have a plan, and so we'll see how it works out.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk. Let's talk a little bit about what we've learned from the rookies, the draft picks, and maybe a little something from rookie camp in terms of what we've heard from the coaches and from Cliff Kingsbury and the draft picks since they've been drafted. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk. There hasn't been much in the way of what the Cardinals have done. They drafted the players. the media members. We talked to the players right after the draft. And now leading up to rookie camp, which was just last week, they spoke to the media again. That's what they did last year. It's pretty typical. They when they get in the building, they talk to the media again a couple of weeks after the fact. You get the reaction of Cliff Kingsbury and things like that. It's been interesting, especially with how stories have been. So kind of like the storylines are being controlled. And I'm not saying it's anything malicious by teams, but right now we still don't have anything open in terms of player access. And so the only media access is to players that the team puts on Zoom, as opposed to a locker room setting or where you could have one reporter talking to one player he's coming off the field and so on and so forth. So we still are limited to that. I'm quite interested in the conversation surrounding their two young cornerbacks in Marco Wilson and Tae Gowan, and how we learned that the Cardinals, and I think this reveals why they really liked Marco Wilson, is one, they saw a skill set and athleticism that is elite. There's some inconsistency in play, but that's still worth a day three pick. But also the positional versatility, his ability to play inside and outside, something that Steve Keim is getting harder and harder to find, are quality slot players. Now, they feel they have one in Byron Murphy, but the fact that you can add another inside-outside versatility guy in Marco Wilson is very intriguing. But they openly talked. I mean, Greg Williams, their cornerbacks coach, openly mentioned his need for consistency. And then Gowan comes in with a swagger that's undeniable, but also has the mental makeup to put in the work. So it's going to be interesting to see. But for me, my first takeaways was I was impressed by what we're hearing about the cornerbacks in particular.
Yeah, and Wilson's definitely the best athlete. I mean, he is Patrick Peterson-esque in terms of his just pure from a pure athleticism standpoint. I mean, his measurables, his workouts were, you know, otherworldly.
And the fact they're coming off of, he's had two torn ACLs that he's come back from.
Yeah, that's,
it's insane.
I think that's the craziest part to me. But, you know, when you look at it, like you said, there's zero consistency in his game. And that's where the concern comes in. He's got to come in and learn how to play at a consistent level. And if he does that, he could become a very good contributor on defense. Like you said, that positional flexibility to play in the slot or on the boundary is so key nowadays. And if you have two of those guys, like you said, in Murphy and Wilson, you're able to not have to chase across the field, right? So you don't have to, if a guy lines up in the slot, you know, let's say Deebo Samuel lines up in the slot on the left, and you've got Malcolm Butler and Tae Gowan as your boundary corners, you don't have to worry if he moves across, and because now you have Byron on, you know, in one slot and Marco on the other. Like, it just makes things a little bit easier from a cover standpoint, instead of having to have Byron chase Deebo all around the field all game long. Now, let's also be realistic. That's probably not something that we're going to see this year, where he's bouncing in and out. It's taken Byron Murphy 3 years to get comfortable playing in just one position. So, you know, it's likely not going to be something we see Marco Wilson do this year, but, you know, in the future, it'd be something, a positive half. Tae Gowan, I've said from the beginning, I think he has a real opportunity to be the steal of this draft. You watch his 2019 film and you see a guy that can be a shutdown cornerback from the footwork, the hips, the ability to mirror, and he is definitely a guy that believes in himself. And I, you know, but like you said, he's also a guy that puts in the effort and the work, which is, you know, fun to see as well. So it's going to be really interesting with those guys, because I think there are expectations on day three guys for the first time in a while, because just because of how lean they are at the cornerback position.
Which is, honestly, that's a scary thing.
It's a scary thing. It's definitely not something that you are like, hey, this is great.
There's a buzz that we don't get, you know, and we've been around a lot of day three picks in the last few years. I feel that. So here's the players that I remember feeling they were really in love with. Okay, they were really in love with Marco Wilson, okay, day three pick. That follows kind of the same buzz. When they drafted Chase Edmonds, they were in love with him. And I wonder if we could get it out of Steve Keim, because he didn't even want to talk about the player comp that he matched up physically to, because it was too high. And I'm wondering, we're probably thinking like Barry Sanders, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know.
It was something ridiculous that we looked at the time. But there's been Andre Ellington. He didn't get the buzz early, but he definitely did later on as the season. So Chase Edmonds got that buzz, and every coach he's been around has, Steve Wilks raved about him. Cliff Kingsbury couldn't keep him out. Like, he had to play him just because of what he did in practice. And I feel like Marco Wilson is kind of getting that same treatment, which will go a long way to Steve Keim's reputation, a draft class, if he could get a day three stud coming out of there. Because
whether it's Marco or Tay, if he gets three contributors, because we're expecting a lot out of both Zaven and Rondell, if he gets three contributors from the 2021 NFL draft, you're talking a big difference in terms of, like you said, expectations and success rate in the draft.
And it's interesting for me, Rondell Moore, I think all they expect from him this year, and they expect him and Collins to play a lot. It instead of getting significant playing on time on offense, because they really kind of hemmed and hummed, we'll see where it goes from there. I think they expect him to be a big time returner, and then gadget player that makes big plays. I think right now Cliff Kingsbury didn't sound too committed to how much playing time that Moore is going to get. It's going to be more like last year's Andy Isabella role. And then you got these other players. So Victor Dimakaji, there's some intrigue there. Their center that they drafted out of Penn State, that's something. But then you got James Wiggins. And it's been a few days since he's talked, but the fact that he comes in and says, you know, he wants to play defense, but he knows he's got to be a dog on special teams. And so you feel if he's healthy and if he feels confident on that knee again, that he should be a big-time special teams player as a rookie. I know Pro Football Focus looks at him, or was it Pro Football Focus? Maybe Pro Football Focus or Touchdown. That of all the gems in the draft, he might be the Cardinals' biggest steal because of the upside at safety.
Well, and he's just so athletic, and that projects so well on special teams, especially for, like you said, a seventh-round rookie. I mean, that's where you have to make your name to start with, and then you get a chance to prove that you can play. But to start out, you know, as a guy that gets reps as a seventh rounder on special teams, he's got the profile for it. It'll be interesting, like you said, Michael Minette and Victor Dimakaji, they're both, like, I don't want this to come out bad, but they're both guys that I don't know where their profile fits, if that makes sense.
Dimakaji, I think he replaces Kylie Fitz at minimum, so I think he's going to actually be a contributor. I don't see how Monette's going to make the roster.
Well, and so my thing with Dimakaji is I feel like he could be the Marcus Golden replacement, but then I remember that they signed Golden for 2 years. Now,
I mean, that's fine because you get a 4 years out of Dimakaji, but
right,
that's a long time to kind of sit on a seventh round pick.
Right, and that was kind of be my point. Like, because that's the thing is Monette and Dimakaji. I mean, Dimakaji might be able to contribute on special teams, but Minette's not going to play on special teams. And so, you know, they're interesting fits. I don't think they're bad picks by any means. I like them as players. I don't know where the fit is, and I'm interested. I'm more interested in see how they fit if they are on the roster and what their expectation levels are than, you know, if they can play, because all these guys can play. I mean, there's a reason they were drafted in the NFL. I'm interested to see, you know, how they're deployed and where they're deployed and how soon they're deployed.
Coming up next on the Rise of Secret podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We'll wrap this up by talking about OTAs. What can we expect? What are the positions early on that are kind of up for grabs in the starting lineup? There's not a lot, but there are spots available. That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the web. Organized team activity, so phase three of the offseason, officially will begin next week. I'm interested. Storyline number one, how many Cardinals show up? The NFLPA has been pushing players to not attend anything voluntary. And many teams have come out and said, frankly, they're boycotting the voluntary part of the offseason. We've seen reports of other teams who have had, because some teams are already starting, and that they've had big participation, but it was after there were concessions made in terms of the types of workout. Maybe it's only all walkthrough, or maybe they cut a week off of the program. We've heard nothing other than the Cardinals released their OTA schedule, which was minicamp last week. They're going to have all 3 weeks of their OTAs and then wrap it up with minicamp after that. Some teams do OTAs 2 weeks, minicamp 1 week, and then OTAs the next week. I'm interested who's going to be there. What's kind of the expectation? Because the Cardinals were not one of the teams that issued a boycott statement. How many players show up? Will Kyler be there? Who's going to be there? What are they going to do? Does Cliff Kingsbury have a plan so that he gets more people there? And I get what the Players Association is saying at the same time. We know, even if it turns it into just walkthroughs, these off-season reps are valuable, especially with teams that are adding players. So it cuts down on the learning curve early in the season.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because we saw today Kyler put on his Instagram he's working out. Was that in Arizona?
I think someone said it was in Dallas. It's probably in Dallas.
Yeah, so we're recording May 18th. So on May 18th, he put on his Instagram, he's working out with AJ Green, Keyshawn Johnson. So the workout aspect, you would have to assume Kyler's okay with, right? Like, if they're working out with teammates.
Well,
right,
and here's
now,
the thing. Of all the players has to worry about, Kyler doesn't have to worry about it. Nobody's allowed to touch the quarterback.
And so, you know, from that perspective, the only way I could see it is if it's a thing where, you know, AJ Green, DeAndre Hopkins, JJ Watt, you know, the guys with some cachet in the league say to Kyler, hey, we need you to say, you know, you're not going to camp, or you need these, like you said, concessions made heading into camp. So we're all in solidarity with the rest of the guys in the league. That's the only thing I can think where you might see some, maybe they're not all there for OTAs or there's some concessions made for those reasons. I mean, other than that, Texas and Arizona, you know, and Florida are really opened up, whereas, you know, California still got some big mandate. California and, you know, New Jersey, New York still have big mandates in place with regard to the virus. So it's not surprising to see teams in those areas send out those statements, and it's not surprising to see teams not in the, you know, in the more open areas not sending out statements. So I'm not sure yet what the expectations are. I just think that when you look at it, unless the veterans on the roster, you know, get in his ear about, hey, this is what we as the league need from you, I would expect that they're mostly there.
And then looking at some not major like roster spot battles, let's talk spots in the starting lineup. I think there are three or four positions that early on feel open. And I'm going to start with right guard. I think right guard on offense is probably the one position that we don't know which way they're going to go, because as much as they like Justin Murray, they went out and got Brian Winters, who feels like the J.R. Sweezy sign of 2 years ago. And they talked about Josh Jones and his positional versatility, his ability to play guard, which suggests to me that I think probably Keim would like Jones to be the starter at guard. And so I think the right guard, I'm interested to see in the first images of OTAs that we're going to get from the team at some point. Who's running with the ones early on? Is it Murray? Is it Winters? Is it Josh Jones? I don't think that Christian Kirk's role is all that up for grabs. I know some people would like to think that, and I even saw where Pro Football Focus projects that Rondale Moore will be the starting in the slot. Based on comments that we're hearing and based on what we've heard of what we've seen in Christian Kirk's good production games and what we've heard about Cliff Kingsbury and about Christian Kirk before and the comments that they've made about Rondale Moore, I don't think there's going to be really a consideration of replacing Kirk. He's moving to the slot. And I think that's going to be fun to see, because back in 2018 when he was drafted, what did everyone say about Christian Kirk except the Cardinals? He's a slot guy. So do you see any other... That's not true. There's one other. I'm interested in the running back position too. So there's really two positions on offense to see. Who's going to be the starter at right guard and at running back? Although I think running back is... It's probably going to be Chase in name, like Kenyon was the starter by name last year, but a split role. What do you think about those two positions?
Yeah, I think it's going to be initially Winters. I think Jones is going to have a chance. I think the way they're paying Murray, the way they talk about Murray, I think that he's their Swiss Army knife backup. I really do. I mean, they're not paying him much in terms of salary, so it's not like him not playing is a huge deal, and they feel so comfortable and they like him so much that him as a backup, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think they would like Jones to win the position, and I think that they're expecting Winters to win the position, if that makes sense.
Correct. I totally agree. On defense, and this is only because he's still on the roster, the spot at outside linebacker in the base, is it going to be Devon Kennard? Is it going to be Marcus Golden? Devon Kennard was the starter early on. Marcus Golden, after he was acquired via trade and Kennard came off the COVID list, it was all Golden. But considering Kennard's still on the roster for the cap number that he is, you got to wonder if that's going to be, for me, a very intriguing starting job.
Yeah, and you would wonder if, like I talked about earlier, is if in their base who's going to start, but I'm more intrigued with how they deploy their defense. I don't feel like they're going to run four backers a lot. I mean, I guess if we're calling Chandler Jones a backer, you know, it's technically a 3-3 that we'll see more of. So I'm interested to see, you know, as you said, who's the starter opposite Jones in a true 3-4 base. But then I'm interested to see who's the guy that comes in off the bench, or is this, you know, that fifth defensive back. So if your traditional look is Murphy, Butler, Buddha, and Jalen Thompson, then who's the fifth guy? Is it going to be Robert Alford and Murph slides in? Is it going to be one of the young guys, Marco Wilson or Tay Gowan? Is it going to be another safety, you know, in the other Deontay Thompson, or, you know, Chris Banjo, who they love, or even Ashawn Williams, who they just picked up? It's really, really intriguing to me to see how they're going to go about that, because I just, with what we know, I can't imagine they're going to play a lot of traditional 34 snaps.
Yeah. I think and I don't think it's going to be more of a case of who the fifth defensive back is as it's going to be the third corner. I don't see them. I honestly don't think I would see them, because that would mean Byron Murphy would stay on the boundary if they brought in another safety. And I thought if they would bring in another safety, since Jalen Thompson who can play in the slot, I don't think Ken Buddha, honestly, we know he can play in the slot as well.
Right. And so that was kind of my thought, is what if they're
running... I know they don't, they like Murphy, that they trust that he can play outside, but his bread and butter is inside. And so I think it's going to come down to Robert Alford staying healthy and Marco Wilson, maybe Tay Gowan. And, or, you know, I bet, you know, if Drake Kirkpatrick hasn't signed somewhere, he met with the Patriots, that he could be a candidate to come back, or even old man Jonathan Joseph at 38 years old could also be a possibility to play as well. But that I do think that third cornerback spot, because I'm going to go with the assumption Byron Murphy is going to be the every down guy, so he will start boundary with Butler in base, but then slides inside, and that the plan will be for Alford initially, but that Marco Wilson or Tay Gowan. I think they're more betting on Marco Wilson this year to be ready than Gowan to potentially replace Alford or fill in for him otherwise. Low key little thing would be, and I Jalen Thompson's spot. I know they love him based on a year ago. But after that year of injury, do they have the same feeling about him, or does that spot become up for grabs for a Banjo or Deontay or Ashawn Williams? That's the only other question. I think that's a lower key one, but my main starting spots, obviously right guard, running back, outside linebacker, and corner three.
Yeah, and I think those are really the only big questions. It'll be interesting to see if they run more 10 personnel, if Rondale Moore is the guy over Andy Isabella. Right, I think we're assuming he is. But, you know, if they end up running a lot of 10 personnel, meaning, you know, one running back, four wide receivers, no tight ends, something that Cliff wanted to do when he initially came with Arizona, if it's Rondell or Andy. But that's, again, we're talking, you know, wide receiver four stuff.
And with that, we will end this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm going to go with the assumption, unless some big news happens in the next couple of weeks, which there is an open roster spot with 89 players on the roster. We could have a Fitz Returns show. I don't know. But as of right now, we'll probably be off for a week or two. And as we hit the end of school years here with our families and probably the beginning of the summer and stuff like that. So we will be back. It just probably won't be next week. So with that, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. That wraps up the show. We'll talk to you guys again another week. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Whoa!